Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Twisted Tuesdays with the Twisted Sisters. And you never know, maybe a Twisted Mister or two. I hope everyone's having a good week so far, and I hope you have a better week to follow. And hello, Pam, and hello, Kate. How are you both tonight?
Hello.
Wonderful.
Hello. Doing great.
Awesome.
Me too.
And how are you
awesome.
Doing, Jean?
I'm absolutely exhausted after dancing.
Oh, my goodness, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
yeah.
I get paid extra for
that. Doing that Irish jig there. It's
Absolutely. Exhausting.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I have to just say, whatever Kate said, I agree. God knows what she said. I have to be careful. Yeah. You never agree to anything you don't understand, but what the hell, right? I'm brave. Oh, my goodness.
It's
so what's
fun.
Happening, girl?
Nothing much with me, as usual. I am no, nothing. I've just been macrammying and having a lovely lazy day.
There you go. Nothing wrong with that. Every now and then we all need one of those. And Pam, what's happening with you?
Oh my goodness. Well, today was not a lazy day for me. I wanted it to be at some point, but It was good. I got a laundry done. I ran errands. Of course, you know how it goes when you run errands, you bring home groceries. You have to be the one to put them away. And by the time you're done, it's exhausting. But I still managed to have enough energy to make this really yummy dinner. We had roast potatoes, onions, sauteed mushrooms, and I sauteed some collard greens with bacon, with thick cut bacon. And it was
very
so good.
Sounds
that's
wonderful.
Marvelous. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
And washed it down with a cold beer, and life is good.
Love
so,
a cold beer.
No,
so, yeah.
Not me.
All good.
Not me. Cold beer gets me all messed up. No fun.
Yeah.
It's a short trip. But anyway, well, that's all good. That's all good. It sounds wonderful. I had a mishmash of everything. I made like 3-4 different things out there that I had to choose from. Absolutely. But yeah, so tell us about the show tonight, Tim. Tell us where you're taking us.
Well, tonight we got I ran 2 small contests for last week's show, which majority of those did not get read. So we have those carryovers. And then I ran another 8 spots only contest to make sure that we would have enough rights. And because there are 3 separate contests and 3 separate prompts, I figure I would just take them one at a time. And so for our first contest that we're going to go through rights for, it's the painting Hanging the Laundry Out to Dry by Bertha Morisot. And anybody who's in Late Night Poets, you can actually go to the topic board for Twisted Tuesday 66, Bertha Morisot Part 2. And at the top of that page, you can see that particular painting. Unless, of course, you know, Jean wants to be nice enough to put it in Late Night Poets, you know, since she seems to be pretty quick about that kind of stuff. That would be awesome. And actually, hanging out the laundry to die, yeah, I wish my laundry would die, sorry, dry, was quite a remarkable piece for Bertha Morisot. It was completed in 1875, and while like most of her paintings, it was in the... what is that called? What kind of artwork form is that? Gosh, I'm blanking out. Well, anyways, Impressionism. It is in the same Impressionism style. And like many of her artwork, it does focus on the everyday life. However, with this one, she expanded. She not only created the everyday, you know, like aspect of the laundry being hung up in the yard, but you can see in the background that she has the steam engines going by, the lines of trees, the clouds. She really expanded beyond the just the yard itself. Now, upon its unveiling, this painting was highly praised for its use of light and color, and it was said that it was a fine example how she had begun to really mature as an artist. However, due to the fact that she was female, she did still have quite a bit of trouble selling her artwork. So that's a little tidbit there about Hanging the Laundry Out to Dry by Bertha Morisot. And back to where I need to be. My goodness, everything's so slow.
Yeah, well, I understand that.
Somebody might have to sing or something while I wait until I can.
Well, Kate, that's you. You're the singer.
That's me. Oh, my God. When did I get nominated to be the singer?
It's a Kate is the singer. You said we needed to sing, and I said, oh, no, Kate's the singer.
Oh, I thought you said you are the singer. I'm like, I don't think so. There you go. Kate's the singer. That works for me. All right. Finally, back to Late Night Poets. And there you go. Thank you very much there, Jean, for putting that in the room. And We're actually, of course, going to start out with a classic poem, which I like to do on Tuesday nights, that I felt fit with the theme of this first prompt. And this is The Washwoman Beats the Laundry by Fernando Pessoa. And Weaver, would you give that a read for us, please?
Yes, certainly. One second. Let me just get myself into the right place. Because you know what I was doing, don't you? I was cutting and pasting because I've done it so often I thought that was my job tonight.
I get it.
Yeah, doing it in my sleep, for goodness sake. Cool. I can just sit back. Comfy. Okay. Fernando Pessoa. Lovely name. The washerwoman beats the laundry. Beats the laundry at what? Running? No. Okay, be good. The washerwoman beats the laundry against the stone in the tank. She sings because she sings and is sad, but she sings because she exists. Thus, she is also happy. If I could do in verses what she does with laundry, perhaps I would lose my surfeit of fates. Ah, the tremendous unity of beating the laundry in reality, singing songs in whole or in part, without any thought or reason. But who will wash my heart? End poem.
Wonderful read there, Kate. And this is one of those poems that I think it's so beautiful in the English language, but I imagine it would be even more beautiful in his original Spanish that he wrote it in. You know, of course, obviously I picked this because it worked well with the theme of you know, the laundry, the wash day. But I also like the extended metaphor in this, the idea of watching someone who, you know, hard at work, you know, the job that makes, it's hard on their body, hard on their hands, and thinking, you know, how they sing out of their sadness, but they also sing of their happiness. And to think, you know, how can I become, you know, that pure of a person in my existence and my emotions. You know, I can just imagine the poet examining the washwoman and just having that epiphany in that moment. So I think that absolutely he is just probably one of the most fantastic classic poets, Fernando Pessoa. And I do apologize if I'm stumbling over that last name. And Jean, your thoughts on this classic poem?
You know, I liked the poem. I thought it was a great, you know, obviously I thought it was a great piece for tonight. You know, it went along with that painting beautifully. I thought the wording was great. I'm sure that Fernando is sitting there waiting to hear my wonderful comment about his wonderful work. But it was just really well done. I liked the way he worded it out, but the washwoman beats the laundry against the stone in the tank. She sings because she sings and is sad. For she sings because she exists. Thus, she is also happy. It says a lot, you know, it kind of goes both ways, right? You know, sometimes we sing because we're happy. Sometimes we sing because we're sad. You know, kind of that, yeah, so why not sing, right? Either way. I like that.
Absolutely.
I do. I kind of like the balance of that thought. You know, if I could do in verses what she does with laundry, perhaps I would lose my surfeit of fate. Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I guess she's a great laundress. That's the way I would take that, you know. But I think it was just, I think it was clever. I think it was a great piece for tonight. And I think it was a nice choice for an intro poem. So nice job, Pam.
Thank you. And great comment. Mm-hmm. And Kate, you did a beautiful read of that. Your thoughts?
Oh, I thought, obviously, this is a classic, isn't it? I imagine it may lose a little bit if it was done in Spanish. It was written originally in Spanish. It is sometimes quite hard to translate and get the same rhythm or cadence or whatever, because the words themselves are being said differently. But it was lovely. It takes you back to when, basically, you had to just beat your laundry against a stone. And I don't even know if they had, what did they have? Soap, perhaps? Did they have? It must have had some kind of soap.
I think a lot of times they use like a bar soap or something, but
yeah.
I guess it depends on the time period and where they were. And to be honest, I'm not 100% sure when actual laundry detergent came out, but I do know there was a time period where you used like a lye type bar soap.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I can remember that. Was it called cobalic? Anyway, it doesn't make any difference. It was good. It was good. This is lovely, and I love that that last stanza, which is always the one that just brings everything together for you. Mm-hmm. Singing songs in whole or in part, without any thought or reason, but who will wash my heart? Ah, so sad.
Yeah.
But yeah, beautiful, really lovely, and I enjoyed it. Good pick.
Thank you, and wonderful comment. All right, and we'll go to our first poem for that contest, which is Laundry Days by Betty Page. And Jean, will you give that a read for us, please?
Absolutely. Let's see now. This is Laundry Days by Betty Page. Hanging clothes on string, soft summertime breeze playing, singing retro songs. Classy femme fatales, everyone is having fun, playing like Elvis. Humming along sweet, dancing to the rhythmic beat while the children play. Swimming in our pool, splashing round in warm sunlight, daddy barbecues. Mama blows bubbles, we chase them round our backyard, my brother pops them. Sister swings, then jumps, lands perfect as a gymnast. We all play baseball. Our dog pulls down clothes. We start all over again. Wash clothes tomorrow.
I am on mute. Okay. Great read there, Jean. And Kate, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, this I like the play on words. Very clever. Laundry days. I like it. Yes, there is something satisfying about hanging out your washing when it's a lovely summer's day and there's a breeze and you know it's all going to come in smelling fresh and you don't even need to iron it because the wind has done all that work for you. But I thought that was lovely. Yeah. Humming along, sweet dancing to the rhythmic beats while the children play. The only downside to that, of course, is if you have to do that same job in the winter. That's awful because you try to get your washing back in and it's stiff and frozen.
Mm-hmm.
It stands up for itself. It's good fun. And your fingers get really sore. But in the summer, it's a different thing entirely. So, and then the dog, everything, they have to do it again. Oh, dear. Oh, my goodness me.
See, me, when I used to live where we didn't have a dryer and I had to hang up clothes, I'd wash little bits at a time, and if it was winter, honestly, I'd find ways to hang it up, like up inside, like you'd see, like, you know, underwears and bras and, you know, t-shirts hanging from ceiling fans and wherever else I could.
In the living room, yeah, whatever you need, I get it too. Anyway,
yeah,
give me a space.
But great comment, Kate. And Jean, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Thanks. I think that she really summed up like a day in the life kind of thoughts here. And I want to congratulate her for the gold. That's nice work there. I think that, hang on a second. Okay. Sorry about that. Yeah, I think it was just like kind of a day in the life of an average family back then, you know? Not all, you know, daddy doesn't grill every day, but, you know, It seems that everyday warm family vibe, you know, like Leave It to Beaver, you know. But it was nicely done. I really liked it. And I thought it was just clever all the way through. My dog pulls down clothes. We start all over again and wash clothes tomorrow. So true. You just keep going, you know, just keep going. So I think it was just nicely done by Betty. So. Well done and well worded, Betty, and thanks for sharing with us. Absolutely.
Yes, I have to agree. In fact, I did actually give this one the gold in the contest. You know, I thought she, with her choice of imagery and words and her 5-7-5 line, like you said, Jean, she really captured that average day, that family time together. I really thought this had wonderful imagery. It was a great atmospheric piece, just a wonderful write on family time and hanging clothes. I like that she has that sense of movement. with, you know, the clothes blowing in the wind. Mama blows bubbles. We chase them around our backyard. My brother pops them. Sister swings and jumps, lands perfect as a gymnast. We all play baseball. And then, you know, as you pointed out, Gene, that the end line was just, you know, it's the reality of life. You know, you have fun together and, you know, you get the work done together and then the next day it starts all over again. You know, when I read this, it really took me back to when my mom used to hang clothes and when my kids were really little and I would hang clothes. And, you know, and Betty and I chatted for a little bit in message and she said that that's what she used to do. And I said, you know, when I read your poem, that's what I thought. I thought, here's somebody who understands what it's like to just that time to go outside, hang up the clothes and then just appreciate that outside time. Wonderful picture painted with her words and very well done.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see what we have next. Doo-doo-doo. All right. Up next we have Hung with a Song of Tomorrow in a Lost Bedroom by Carmichino Poetry, who also wanted to be acknowledged by her given name when her poem was read, which is Gwyneth Liv. And with that being said, it goes like this. The floor is littered with clothing, a tad bit stained, a whole lot wrinkled, the nest of a hermit, the lair of a broken bird. Smelling like the laundry pile of a century, the feel, Tuesday brunch drenched with spicy salsa, panting feet from the scathing flavor, in denial when your roommate hogs the laundry machine as a favor. You come like a plunderer in the dead of the night, putting the humid laundry aside and your own into the washing machine. In the background, loud EDM music plays to hide your desperate need for cleansing. Three cupfuls of soap and gone salsa, weeping they would stain dreams instead. Silently, you switch laundry back again, wondering what to do with the wet pile. There's too many people to let drying laundry be broadcasted across the room. You hang it with a song of tomorrow in your bedroom instead. End poem. And what a beautiful write by Gwyneth. I have to say, I think she's a fairly new name to me, so I was glad to see someone who was new to me. And I actually hope to be reading more of her on our shows and in our contest, because I definitely think she's got a wonderful, style, but I was trying to think how to describe her style. She definitely has a wonderful style, and I really appreciated this. And Jean, your thoughts?
You know, I think it was nicely done all the way through. A great choice of wording and just a well-described scenario throughout. You know, it was kind of clever. Painting feet from this scathing flavor in denial when your roommate hides the laundry machine as a favor. You know, you become like a plunderer in the dead of night, putting the human laundry aside and your own into the washing machine. You know, I have to say, and then you get down here where you hang it with the song of tomorrow in your bedroom instead. So it's just about, you know, states what I think you spoke of on the last poem. You know, it's like we were laughing and about hanging the laundry wherever we have to. I think we've all been there and done that for whatever reason. This one just happens to be the window. But I think it was just nicely put together, and I think it was well worthy of the bronze. I like the whole attitude of the piece. I thought it was nice. So great job, Carmichino Poetry. I hope to hear some more of her work as well, Tim. I have to agree. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, yes. And it is always interesting to see how people can take the same prompt and run in different directions with it. So great comment.
Right.
And Kate, your thoughts?
Yes, this, you don't think about it, do you? In your own home, with your own rhythm and routine, and, you know, your own washing machine, you don't think about having to share things like that, do you? Not now, obviously, when you were younger, it would be a part of life, but I can imagine you've got things you desperately want to wear in a couple of days, and somebody else is washing, sitting there, fuming in the washing machine, and getting horribly soggy and wet and vile, and you've got to take it out and put your own in. Ugh. Yes. I mean, you shouldn't leave laundry in the machine because it doesn't do it any justice. It gets all that stuff scrunched together. Look, I don't like it at all. So that, I can imagine, must be so annoying. But then you get your laundry done, you put the other laundry back in, and then you've got this wet pile of clothes. Ah, you should have just left it for the next day, shouldn't you, really? Because now she's hanging up dripping clothes in her bedroom. What a shame. Oh, well, what a life to have to share these things with other people. I thought it was very well written. And it, obviously, I got the whole idea of what she meant so easily because of the way she wrote it. It was very clear and very well done. So thank you for sharing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Wonderful comment. Yeah, I really like the imagery in this. It's powerful. It's a great, almost like extended metaphor. And as you were saying, Kate, it really shows what it's like to have to maneuver your time and your life around other people. I like how, though, it to me, it metaphorically represents the idea of those stains of ourselves, that parts of ourselves that we want to keep hidden from other people, you know. And, you know, in the background, loud EDM music plays to hide your desperate need for cleansing. Three cupfuls of soap and gone salsa weeping, they would stain dreams instead. You know, that just that idea of that ugliness that we sometimes feel on the inside, that you just want washed away and you don't want anyone else to see your struggle to wash it away. You know, this is definitely an amazing write on the idea of the never-ending cycle of trying to clean up life's messes. So great writing and very well done. All right, let's see here. Up next, we have Soap by Time Teller. And Kate, would you give that a read for us, please?
I would be happy to. And I'm off mute. Ha, ha, ha. So, Soap by Time Teller. Laundry day is coming, but which day of the week will it arrive, I wonder? Time scrubbing brush is soon to be put to work, scrubbing and scouring the limescale build-up of human habitation. Evolution's effluent, digested mistakes emptied into rivers, seas, oceans, and even space. Love itself comes with its own plastic carrier bag of contaminants, altering the pH and nitrogen content of the water drank and used in washing. To use lots of comfort in your washes, those of us left will need it. The forked tongue of progress has us on a cliff edge, while the two-headed, many-faced primal animal we call civilization preaches kindness and collects material wealth, while the myriad of poor and starving wish laundry day would arrive sooner, while queuing at the dip pens and shearing sheds of humanity. End poem.
Great read there, Kate. Yeah, I thought this was a wonderful metaphorical piece by Time Teller. I like how he took the idea of laundry and brought it into almost like a social political commentary. One of the main messages that I got from this was on how people are left to clean up the messes by the powers that be. I also feel like it kind of goes into debates about what's better for the environment. And I'm going to use an example that probably, I don't think Time Teller would have meant this, but it makes me think of the idea when, you know, people will talk about which is better to do, have like, you know, use disposable, like, or reusable diapers, cloth diapers, which you have to, you know, buy laundry detergent for and send that into, you know, the back into the whatever, you know, I forget. But anyways, there used to be, and I don't know if there still is, but there used to be this big debate whether it was really worth it to use cloth diapers. You know, if you, with all the detergents and soaps and plastics used, was it really making a difference? Now, me personally, though, I did not use cloth diapers. I do believe it makes a difference. But I feel like in part that this speaks on the idea of people not being able to make up their mind what truly is best for the environment, and rather than trying to figure it out, spending their time arguing. I like the use of the phrase evolution effluent, digested mistakes emptied into rivers, seas, oceans, and even space. Love itself comes with its own plastic carrier bags of contaminants, altering the pH and estrogen content of the water drank and used in washing. You know, it's a powerful lines, really, that make you think about the idea of what truly is going into your water. I don't know about anywhere where you guys have lived, but the town I used to live in, Superior, Wisconsin, was just horrible for putting too much chlorine in the water. You know, and I think they obviously had a reason. They felt they had to do that, but it was just a little too much. And it really makes you think about, you know, what exactly is going into your city water and what exactly is going into your body. But I think this is a nicely layered piece that's thought-provoking, so very well done. And Jean, your thoughts?
Well, you know, I was kind of thinking about what you had to say while you were commenting, Sam. I have to agree. I thought there were a lot of great metaphors throughout. You know, if only soap could wash away the injustices in this society, ranging from all of the injustices and down to the contaminants that we have feeding back out into our water system. I agree with that 100%. And, I kind of think that you nailed the thoughts here. So I enjoyed the piece very much. And I picked the forked tongue of progress has us on the cliff edge. While the two-headed, many-faced primal animal we call civilization teaches kindness and collects material wealth, while the myriads of poor and starving wish laundry day will arrive sooner, while queuing at the dip pens and shearing sheds of humanity. Yeah, you know, everybody wishes that laundry day would come quicker and clean up the mess. You know, whichever mess we want to refer to, because I think it could go either way in my mind, so I'm not going to point at one. So great job, Tom Seller, and hey, thanks for sharing with us, as always. Always appreciate your work. Thank you.
Absolutely, and I'm glad you pointed out that line, the forked tongue of progress, because I had been thinking earlier that that's one of those lines that would make a great contest prompt. So very cool. And Kate, your thoughts?
Yes, this was very interesting and really well done. I enjoyed the different elements of putting together the story with the story of the city and the contaminants, and also the story of our lives as they went on from scouring against a stone in the river to lots of comfort in your washes. Because they used to wash in the river, they would use whatever they could as a cleaning agent, but there were so few of them, so it didn't have the same effect on the environment that thousands and millions of people washing their clothes and washing their cars and all the different chemicals that are used are all going back, because everything ends up in the sea. We came from the sea and we go back to the sea. And unfortunately, we go back to the sea and it's not the way it used to be, I'm afraid. And it is just the volume of people and things that are being used that's causing all the problems. Because if it was, you know, if it was a quarter of the amount of people, then we could cope with it, you know. It's just that we're getting too many, not saying there are too many of us, there are just a lot of us now. And we are tipping the scales of our poor little world reminds you of a bit of cheese. You know that cheese with all the holes in it, and the little maggots coming out of it that people relish eating for some reason. That's what the world makes me think of. So yes,
God.
Thank you.
Don't tell me
great
the name of it. My brain. Well,
that is
really
quite
me. Okay, I'm gonna be quiet now. Oh, Kate, you're too much. Get me thinking, boy. I'll tell you. Oh,
so sorry.
No, don't be sorry. I kind of like it. It just you crack me up because you catch me when I'm not paying attention. I like it. gosh.
All right. Well, up next we have Growing Season by Maggie M. and Kate, not Kate, sorry, Jean. Would you give that a read for us, please?
Jean sounds a lot like Kate. It's all right.
Yeah, very
good. Oh, Growing Season. My daughter's name's Kate, so it works. It's interchangeable here at this house. Okay, Growing Season by Maggie M. The light is bright, fresh, and new. We paint fences, trim hedges, till fields, sow rows of seeds and intentions, sit into the soil, bleed into it, dripping sweat, wiping brows, praying for balance between light and dark, wet and dry, waiting for the green tendrils, soft and supple, to climb their way out from under their cover, looking towards the light. In the place where wind crests hills, deft hands smooth white sheets, into rows across drooping clothesline, propping them up with wooden stakes, each gust of wind pushing them up and outward, billowing white blooms, blossoming like petals reaching for the sky and home.
Read, Jean, and what a beautiful write by Maggie M. And Kate, your thoughts.
I really enjoyed this. This was a beautiful piece of poetry. And the first couple of lines, of course, wonderful. The light is bright, fresh, and new. And then we go on to learn what they're doing. So we're looking at a picture of what these people are doing, and we're hearing the words telling us what's going on. And it looks like it's very hard work. But then, you know, you have, again, you put the work in, you get the results. And I remember those wooden stakes. I don't know if you had them. You must have done. Yeah, when you've finally got everything on, you use that to prop up the washing so that the wind can't make it flap around too much. And you know, I love those. In actual fact, I pinched my mother's and made a set of stilts out of them. She didn't know where they went. That was great fun.
Oh,
I loved it. She used to see me going past the front garden with the big hedge, and all she could see was my head. And she thought she was seeing things. What's she doing up there? She's like 6'5" or something. Anyway, yes, so that's what I love about those wooden poles. It takes me back to my days of making stilts. Ah, dear. Anyway. In the place where the wind crests hills, deft hands smooth white sheets into rows across drooping clotheslines, propping them up with wooden stakes. Each gust of wind pushing them up and outward. Exactly what it's like. It's just that lovely, blossoming, blooming, white sheets flapping in the breeze. It's just a lovely sound, and it's a lovely sight because, you know, you've done all the hard work. Now you've got the lovely clean sheets to lie on. Lovely. So, yeah, I think this is a beautiful piece of poetry, and it really it makes me think of those days. Of painting fences and trimming hedges. No, not so much. But lovely. Very well done. Thank you.
I like that. I like that. Great comment. And I really enjoyed hearing the story. I can imagine little Katie going around on a pair of stilts.
I love that.
Oh, that's awesome. That is. I love that story. And Jean, your thoughts.
I can more imagine little Katie keeping everyone else on their toes. That's the way I view that whole story. You got to keep an eye on her because she's always into something. That's what I see. But
you know me so well.
Yeah, a little bit. No, I don't know why, but I think we're related. I keep saying it. I think that this poem, I like the imagery throughout the poem, between the sowing of seeds and the hanging of laundry, painting fences. You know, it to me, it represents, you know, spring into summer. You know, that seasonal, well, probably spring because they're planting seeds. And just all the activities that keep things running and working and going forward, you know, dripping sweat, wiping brows, playing for balance between light and dark, you know, and wet and dry, waiting for green tendrils, soft and supple, to climb their way out from under the covers, looking towards the light. You know, there's so much depends on the weather. You know, the heat and the light and the dark, you know, the laundry is going to dry better in the warmer, you know, air and, you know, what have you. But I think that it just was really like all well pulled together. Because on the left side of that image, it does look like someone might be planting. So I think it was just, I think it was a great take on the prompt, not really reliant on the prompt. You know, because we read it, you don't have to go up and see the image in order to understand it. You know, it definitely paints the picture all its own. So I think in that respect, it was really well done, Maggie. And I really enjoyed it. And I thought it was really down to earth. And hey, congratulations on the silver. Absolutely.
Yes, absolutely. Wonderful comment. And I have to agree with you, Jean. And yeah, this one I gave a silver. And the top three weren't easy to place. I kept going back and forth, but yeah, this one, I like the fact that, as you said, Jean, it wasn't dependent on the artwork, so you can see where the inspiration came from. I really liked that while she mentions the laundry, it's not just about the hanging the laundry, the clothesline. She really takes a look at the full picture. I like what you had to say about the transition from spring into summer and the thought of, you know, taking advantage of those warm days when you needed to get stuff done in the yard, around the house. I really felt like she didn't just focus on the forefront of the picture, the artwork, but looked all throughout it. And the opening lines, the light is bright, fresh, and new. Whether she meant for it to or not, I don't know, but I felt like that really gave a tribute, a praise to the fact that Bertha Morisot's use of lighting and color in this artwork was particularly praised. I really like the imagery throughout. I like how it's speaks on the idea of birth and growth in nature. I particularly like where she says, dripping sweat, wiping brows, praying for balance between light and dark, wet and dry, you know, because that truly is, especially back then, the life of a farmer, the life of a homestead owner, and, you know, hoping that life, that nature creates that balance that you need. You know, not too much rain, not too little rain, and you know, just the hope that's in there. I really like the imagery in this how she captures the art as a whole rather than just a singular focus. So wonderful write and very well done. All right, and up next we have Stained for All to See by Jenny the Deep. Hung her dirty laundry out to dry, early morning into the dead of night. Thought her business was safe outside, keeping her tracks hidden from his sight. Stain after stain, her stories unraveled. Ripped jeans, frail tees, lives now shattered, pulling at strings desperately to be clean, yet lie after lie is seen through her teeth, white turned pink by her melted lipstick. No bleach to correct this mistake so big. Across town she wears her stains proud as people stare silently, secretly in doubt. End poem. And Jean, your thoughts?
No, can do. I was typing. Sorry. I'm going to read it again, though. I'm going to read it right now.
Okay.
Sorry, Kate.
No, no problem. All right, Kate, you've been thrown under the bus. Your thoughts?
I like this a lot. Let's face it, we all start off. I mean, our days start off, our weeks start off with dirty laundry. But this is somebody, so the metaphor is obviously the person and her life and the dirty laundry that she has and the fact that her life is unraveling. And, she's got an awful lot of woe and misery, stain after stain, her stories unravel. And, yeah, she's really not doing very well. So this is, yeah, so this basically is using that laundry as a pointer to her life. White turned pink by her melted lipstick. No bleach to correct this mistake so big. Across town she wears her stains proud as people stare silently, secretly in doubt. Yeah, here's somebody who's decided they're not going to pretend that they are what they're not. To hell with everybody. She's going along her merry way. She tried and it's not made any difference. So she's not going to be able to do what everybody else does. So she's just going to live her life, I think. Oh, that's kind of how I see it. But very well done, Jenny. I enjoyed
it. Very cool. And great comment. Yeah. I did. I really liked her imagery and metaphors in this. It's a hard-hitting, dark, right, emotive, in the idea of somebody who's living a double life and who thinks that they can, you know, the lying and the sneaking around and thinking that they can keep all of their stains hidden, you know. And I really thought all three stanzas were nicely written. But I have to say it was that third stanza that really grabbed my attention, especially with white turned pink by her melted lipstick. No bleach to correct this mistake so big. I mean, not only does it work as a great metaphor, but it's something relatable because I think we've all had that moment where we accidentally put the red T-shirt or the tube of lipstick or whatever, you know, in with the white and had that, you know, permanently pink stuff coming out. And, you know, so I really thought this was an excellent write on taking a metaphorical approach on the idea of dirty laundry. So very cool. And Jean, your thoughts?
You know, this piece, it says that it's on the dirty laundry pump. I thought we were doing the image. So I'm a little confused as to what the prompt was. I thought it was a name.
I think she just picked it in a different way. Yeah, because this is the same contest, same prompt. I think she just kind of took it in the idea of, you know, what the laundry was before it was,
I guess. I mean, I was kind of like looking for something a little different. But, you know, what do I know, right? I thought it was a nice take on a prompt. Because she said dirty laundry. I assumed that's what it was. Dirty laundry is never easy to air. Public opinion is seldom at a loss, you know, and that's very true. You know, and I take the whole thing as a metaphor, not basically directed at that image prompt. It's thinking it's all about the things that have gone on that are now coming to light in the public eye. And I think the laundry was a great place to be able to write it out and word it. And I think it was clever. You know, stain after stain, her stories unraveled. Ripped jeans, frailed trees, lives now shattered, pulling at strings desperately to be clean. Yet lie after lie is seen through her teeth. You know, white turned pink by her melted lipstick. You know, it just sounds like a woman who was caught in an adulterous situation and you know, and the word is out. And everybody's yammering because that's what people do. Anyway, I'll be quiet now. Great job. Really enjoyed the piece. Nice work, Jenny.
Great comment. Yeah, and you're right. It does, you know, have that feel of, you know, putting your dirty laundry out to air and, you know, the things that come to light. So great comment. All right. Well, we are now going on to our second contest, which is a quote prompt. So the rights in this contest will all be written to the following Bertha Morisot prompt or quote, which you can also find on the topic board in Late Night Poets. And this is, "My ambition is limited to the desire to capture something transient, and yet this ambition is excessive." Bertha Morisot. And I don't think there's a whole lot to say about the quote other than that, you know, in my opinion, it's a great reflection of what I can imagine that a reflection of her personality and a reflection of what drove her to create art, you know. So, and I thought it would make for an interesting prompt to see, you know, how people took it in different directions. So, that being said, All right, and up next we have Blind Ambition by Matt29. And Kate, would you give that a read for us, please?
I would be happy to. If I could just get it open, it would be wonderful. Ah, there, got it. I'm at 29. Blind Ambition. Reaching out into the ocean is like the roulette bet, desiring everything whilst floundering in the deep, wanting to succeed no matter what the cost, stumbling into the road of life without protection, pursuing a pot of gold which is always out of reach, pushing towards something which is unattainable. Having a table of food and not knowing when to stop, gorging out on everything in sight to the last crumb. Feeling like your sense of rationality has skipped away. Instead, desire has you under its spell of denial. Nothing is beyond you now as you blindly walk on, taking risk after risk to achieve your ambition. The thrill is long-lasting and the stairway steep. So you are not dismayed from capturing, swayed from capturing the prize." End poem.
Great read there, Kate. And what a full write by Matt29. I really felt like this had a lot of words of wisdom to it. And of course, I'll comment further. But before I do, I'll get your guys' thoughts. So your thoughts, Jean.
You know, I thought this was a great piece based on that prompt. I really did. You know, I was like listening to the first half and then kind of caught up about halfway through. But pursuing a pot of gold, which is always out of reach, pushing towards something which is unattainable, having a table of food and not knowing when to stop, bridging out on everything in sight to the last crumb, feeling like your sense of rationality has skipped away. Instead, desire has you under its spell of denial. Nothing is beyond you now as you blindly walk on, taking risk after risk to achieve your ambition. It's just like, you know, he's writing about going in, you know, going all in, you know, to get what it is he's after. And I mean, the stanza after that, the thrill is long lasting and the stairway steep. So you are not dissuaded from capturing the prize, you know, which means you keep going. No matter how excessive it seems, you know, get your eye on the pie. I think that's just that. Isn't that how they say it? Get your eye on the pie?
Yeah.
And I think that really is what it basically comes down to, and whatever the cost. So I think you did a great job there, Matt29. Excellent work, and thanks for sharing.
Yeah, I like that you brought that up, that the idea of, you know, keeping your eye on the prize. So very cool. Very cool. Great comment and observations. And Kate, your thoughts.
Beautifully written. It really is beautifully written. I'm a little bit disappointed because I thought you said keep your eye on the pie. And I'm getting a bit hungry, so that sounded really good. You mean the pie?
I'm on my way.
If you want the pie to be your prize, you could keep an eye on the pie.
I'm very good at keeping my eye on a pie, definitely. Yeah, I love that middle stanza, or the second stanza. Pursuing a pot of gold which is always out of reach, pushing towards something which is unattainable, having a table of food and not knowing when to stop, gorging out on everything in sight to the last crumb. Yes, it is. It's if you have goals in life, it is going to be hard. And of course, the harder things get, the more you have to dig deep and get the strength and keep pushing, as you say, keep pushing on. But never easy, though. Never. And I do like that, feeling like your sense of rationality has skipped away instead. Desire has you under its spell of denial. Lovely. And again, you know, those last two lines have been quoted already, but they're beautiful. I think this is really well, they've taken that prompt and really knocked the whole story out of it, which is very clever. So thank you, Matt. I really enjoyed that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great comment. Yeah, I really liked this one. Like I said, I think it's thoughtful, it's intelligent, a great take on the prompt. I like how it speaks on the persistence to go for the prize, but it also almost serves as a tale of warning that sometimes we want that instant gratification. And I think that especially comes through in that second stanza. Pursuing a pot of gold, which is always out of reach, pushing towards something which is unattainable, having a table of food and not knowing when to stop, gorging out on everything in sight to the last crumb. I really feel like this poem speaks on obtaining your goals, but not obtaining them in such a way that you try to grab everything at once, but rather take it one step at a time. I also like where it says, nothing is beyond you now as you blindly walk on, taking risk after risk to achieve your ambition. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with being a risk taker, but it can be one of those things where it can be a strength or it can be a weakness, because if you're so blind to your ambition that you don't see what you're doing to yourself or also to the relationships you have with other people because of that blind ambition. So just a excellent write and very well done.
Nice comment, Pam. I want to let you know that we have Laurent joining us. So hello, Laurent, and welcome to the party.
Hey, Laurent, glad you could join us.
Mute.
Well, Lord, maybe somebody else has their number. Hello, 585. Who's calling, please? Maybe it's not. Nope.
Maybe he fell asleep.
That's not nice.
Waiting for us to answer.
He just dropped. Well, he dropped, so I guess maybe next time.
Okay. All right. Well, with that, you know, whether it was Laurent or somebody else, the 585 number will, you know, if they want to call back, they're welcome to. And if not, that's fine too. All right. So up next we have Can't Quit You by Darkened Auras. And Jean, will you give that a read for us, please?
Well, I will give it a try. Yeah. There it is. I found it. And again, this is for the same prompt that I read last time. I'm not sure if there was more than one prompt in this, Sam. So if it is, forgive me. But my ambition is limited to the desire to capture something transient. And yet, this ambition is excessive. And it's called Can't Quit You by Dark and Doris. I can't quit you. You're an intoxicating drug teasing all my senses. Your slender figure dressed in a long silk nightgown, white as the purest snow and wrapped in red satin sheets. The sweet aroma of jasmine shampoo lures my nose to your tangerine hair. My fingers trail down the smooth curves of your supple skin, creating electric vibrations, chills, and goosebumps. My tongue takes taste spoons of your neck. Stop to suckle your earlobe. Your pleasureful moans are music to my ears. Let's make a symphony together. Quit you, and I never want to. End poem. Mm-hmm.
Great read there, Jean. Wow, this one was definitely heated. I have to say, we could have probably saved this for a Wednesday, and it would have heated up the airwaves. But I like it. I like it. I thought it was a great take, a creative take on the prompt. She puts in her AN, the ambition of lovemaking to capture something transient and always wanting more. And she puts, hope this isn't vulgar or anything. Nope, definitely was not vulgar to me. It was a beautiful use of imagery and metaphors and allusion to capture the idea of being sensually drawn to somebody. And I thought, you know, making love is a great example of something that is transient, because while obviously you can do it over and over again, it is in that one singular moment that it's happening that, you know, there won't be an exact, you know, repeat. Like, it's just so intimate and beautiful in the moment, and yet you can't help but, especially if it's with the right person, you know, crave more. I really like how this is, she brings in the other senses, like the sweet aroma of jasmine shampoo lures my nose to your tangerine hair. My fingers trail down the smooth curves of your supple skin, creating electric vibration, chills, and goosebumps. And I really like how this compares almost like the idea of being addicted to somebody. I can't quit you, and I never want to. Wonderful, sensual take on the prompt, and very well done. And Kate, your thoughts?
I did love those first few lines. I can't quit you. You're an intoxicating drug teasing all my senses. That's lovely. That is really, that brightens up anybody's life, doesn't it? But it's nice to know that there are still people out there loving each other and caring about each other, because all we seem to get is the bad side of life, don't we? We get to hear about those more than we hear about anything else. So this is just lovely. It's a lovely take on the quote, I think. It's true. It's true. Making love is transient. And, of course, it's something that you want to get better at. I like it. I like it. Yeah. Great. Great. It was a great idea, a very clever idea of using that kind of slant for the quote, and I really enjoyed it. So thank you for sharing.
Yep, exactly. Great comment, Kate. And Jean, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Well, let's see. First off, I want to quote every line, okay, because I like them all. I thought it was a wonderful take on the film, and it was clever because it was unique. It wasn't, you know, when you read the prompt, it kind of puts you into a different zone. At least it did me. You know, ambition, I think of, you know, a career or something, that kind of thing. But this was wonderful because this brought it down to the senses, you know, your senses and how they respond. I can't quit you. You're an intoxicating drug teasing all my senses. Your slender figure dressed in a long silk nightgown, white as the purest snow and wrapped in red satin sheets. It's a lovely imagery. It really is. And then my tongue tastes things of your neck. Stop to suckle your earlobe. Your pleasureful moans in my ears. Let's make a symphony together. I can't quit you, and I never want to. It's a whole different kind of ambition. And in the, down in her author's note, she says, the ambition of lovemaking, to capture something transient and always wanting more. It was a great take on that prompt, really. And just, you know, Laurent's back. So, great job, and thank you so much, Darkened Auras. I thought it was just wonderful.
Definitely, definitely. Yeah, and like you said, it was a creative take off of the prompt. So, wonderful comment. All right, let's see here.
Did you hear me, Dan?
What's that?
Did you hear me? We have Laurent back with us. Laurent, did you hear that poem?
Yes, I did.
Would you like to comment on it?
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure you can hear me all right.
Okay, you're fine.
Okay. I can't quit you. You're an intoxicating drug, teasing all my senses. When you are attracted to someone that powerfully, a poem can pop into your head at almost any time, which is why sometimes you'll see these essential poems on Tuesday or Monday or Sunday or whenever, Pam. Not always on Wednesday.
Very true.
I just did it. I did it last night. So it was. Jean gave a really good comment on it. She covered it absolutely thoroughly. I won't go beyond that except to say I really enjoyed this.
Absolutely. I have to agree. Wonderful comment. All right. And continuing on with the same contest, we have Whiskey Music by Sandy G. And Laurent, I'm going to go ahead and put you to work. Will you go, give that a read for us, please?
All right. I don't know why I keep losing the room. Is that by Sandy G? Whiskey Music. He tuned the string, sawed the bow in a resin heavy country show. A touch of genius to and fro, poignant sadness, pull and row. When he bowed a brave allegro, reverberation rang with joy. His presence gained in stature, was thought a happy boy. Happy notes died in the rafters every night from song to silence. Left alone, much deflated, only whiskey served to soothe him. Whiskey was a looking glass, each performance a decline. Drank himself into the gutter, his failure full and well defined. The fiddler played out his tragedy, a darkness ruled his inner mind. Only whiskey stemmed the tide, bow and fiddle at his side.
Great read there, Laurent, and what a wonderful rhyming poem by Sandy G. And Kate, your thoughts?
I like this. I like this. There's an awful lot of pain and sadness in a story like this because it happens over and over and over again, doesn't it? I mean, the thing about alcohol is it's legal. So you're killing yourself legally. And that is what makes it so hard because everybody can then, you know, they can go out and they can buy it. Yes, I thought it was really very well done. And especially whiskey was a looking glass. Each performance saw decline, drank himself into the gutter, his failure full and well defined. I honestly think this is really deep and very clever.
I have to agree. Wonderful comment. And Jean, your thoughts?
I'm sitting here trying to remember the full quote that they were writing to. And I've only read it twice out loud. But hey, you know. I think that this really was a good take on the prompt. It was, and again, this is like the last one. It's a whole different kind of approach to the prompt itself. The ambition and the excess, you know, the excess apparently is the whiskey. But saw decline, drank himself into the gutter, his failure full and well-defined. The fiddler played out his tragedy. A darkness ruled his inner mind. Only whiskey stemmed the tide, bow and fiddle at his side. you know, you have that prize that you're going for and you're trying for. And in this case, the excess of the whiskey, you know, ruined it all. You know, the ambition was there, but it fell to the wayside from what I see. So great job, Sandy G. And I think that you really hit on something completely different and unique in this way. And congratulations on the honorable mention. Well done.
Absolutely. And yes, yeah, that was one of the things I liked about this poem is he took the quote prompt in a different direction. And so excellent observations. And Lauren, you did a great read of that. Your thoughts?
The fiddler played out his tragedy, and darkness ruled his inner mind. Only whiskey stemmed the tide, bow and fiddle at his side. It's ironic that the thing we take in order to forget, in order to deal with our issues, our sorrows, our darkness, is the thing that creates the darkness and amplifies it. It's such a mixed blessing. He understands that whiskey is a looking glass, that a person is going to see himself like either a reflection in the bottle or a mental reflection. You know, as the singer Wren says, we are neither demons or angels or gods. What separates us from that, the fact that we're human beings, we fail. We are not perfect. We are all imperfect. And this is a story that's been going on since the dawn of time in one form or another, and it's never going to change because we are, after all, just human beings. Great piece.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Wonderful comment. Yeah, I thought this was a beautifully written piece. Great rhyme and flow. Wonderful imagery. I like how, to me, it speaks, it's a very emotive write that speaks on a man who tries to temporarily forget his pain. And at first he does it through music, you know, and you know, both music and getting drunk are very transient, very temporary. And you can just see the idea of this man who has this gift for music that people appreciate. And eventually that gift is put aside to drown his sorrows in the bottle. And I really like this one all the way through, but it was the last couple stanzas that really grabbed my attention. Whiskey was a looking glass. Each performance saw decline, drank himself into the gutter, his failure full and well-defined. You know, that idea of setting aside those things that once brought us a pleasure in life to drown sorrows in a bottle, which is sadly only a temporary fix for the pain we're trying to hide. So excellent write by Sandy G, and very well done. All right, let's see what we have next. Up next we have Raven by Arliss D, and it goes like this. Mask of Raven glides on the clouds, descends from desiccated hilltops across arid plains into my silent camp. Wingspan blots out the sun. Eyes glisten with a hunter's hunger for lasting prey. I stir the fire, sweat impurities into perfect coffins of sand. Maker of light, Raven tricks me into shaping the night with waves of gray painted on the blue horizon. I cannot map his movements. Cacti stab the weighted air, deflate dreams of birds, trailing in Raven's wake. Feathers fall like clumps of coal, cushioned by soft landings. I place them on my chest, don Raven's ever-shifting mask, settle back in the sand, and await the coming of the light. End poem. and I just thought this was absolutely a brilliant write, as always, by Arliss D. He's quite an impressive poet in my eyes. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Fascinating piece. Maker of light, Raven tricks me into shaping the night with waves of gray painted on the blue horizon. I cannot map his movements. Who can map a raven at night, black as it is? The raven seems to be, he seems to be a hunter, and there seems to be a moment when birds, perhaps the raven himself, falls to the earth. He becomes the raven. I place them on my chest, the raven's ever-shifting mask, settle back in the sand and await the coming of the light, almost as if he becomes the raven, and a transformation that's really, really cleverly done.
Absolutely, yes. I have to agree. Wonderful comment. And Kate, your thoughts?
Yes, this is, as Laurent said, this is an interesting, very interesting poem. Wow. Yeah, Raven mask. Yeah, this is the mask of Raven. So you could don it, couldn't you? You could have that mask and you could then take over that position. Yeah, I get that. That is cool. Yeah. Maker of light, Raven tricks me into shaping the night with waves of gray painted on the blue horizon. I cannot map his movements. Cacti stab the weighted air, deflating dreams of birds. Yes, this is really, really lovely. I really enjoyed it. It's an interesting and I don't know whether it's sad or whether it's dark, but I enjoyed it anyway. It just flowed, which is always great to hear. So thank you for sharing that.
Absolutely. Wonderful comment. And Jean, your thoughts?
Oh, gosh, I tell you, but I charge extra for thoughts. I thought this was a well-penned piece by Arliss D. Good imagery throughout. I thought that, you know, there's this great aspirations, you know, brought to an end in the piece. And I think that it was just nicely presented to all of us. And, you know, it's nothing like a Raven poem, right? That's the way I feel. But yeah, I think that it was a great piece, and thank you for sharing, Arliss D. Excellent one.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Wonderful comments. Yeah, I really like this one. First of all, I like how it brings in the raven as the trickster, the messenger, you know, especially as a trickster, which makes me think of Native American lore. I actually felt like, and obviously I ran this contest a week ago, but even, you know, like I was thinking as it was being read this time on the show, it kind of, I think, would have fit really well in with the Last Night After Midnight show with Jim Morrison prompts. Because to be honest, I feel like it almost has like a peyote trip type feel to it that works really well with Jim Morrison's style of poetry. But, you know, I like how this is that idea of connecting with the night, connecting with nature. I thought it had a wonderful imagery and amazing metaphors, an excellent write on soaring dreams pulled down into reality by the trickster. And I think that can be the representation of our own mind, our own doubts. You know, and the end stanza, I placed them on my chest, Don Raven's ever-shifting mask, settle back in the sand and await the coming of the light. And to me, that represents the idea that sometimes we can have our head in the stars and the clouds, you know, floating away, and other times we need to be more grounded. I also really like the imagery in cacti stab the weighted air, deflate dreams of birds. I think that's a great representation or metaphor for the idea of people whose negativity quickly deflates any air you had in you know, your dreams being reached. So just a wonderful, thought-provoking write and very well done. All right, let's see here. All right, and next up we have Imprisoned Fragments of Time by Jody Melton. And Kate, will you give that a read for us, please?
I certainly will. So this is Imprisoned Fragments of Time by Jody Melton. In pursuit of dreams, the limits fade. A poet's soul is a restless crusade. My ambition, he mused, is boundless, it seems, to capture the capture abstract like whispers in dreams. He yearns to see stars in his lyrical net, to weave them through verses, a luminous duet. Yet in his pursuit, he ponders with care how ambition excessive can turn to despair. But still, he persists, bends attention to capture the essence of the soul's aspiration, to paint with words what the eye cannot see, to sculpt the intangible with sheer poetry. His ambition, a flame that blazes and soars, through realms of imagination he explores. Though bound by his limits, he dares to believe in the magic of words, his dream he'll achieve. But within his yearning, a paradox lies, the excessive desire that forever defies. Yet he embraces the struggle undeterred, but within this tension, his passion's assured. So let him chase echoes, ethereal and grand. With a quill as his sword, he'll conquer the land. His poetry is a vessel for the abstract to dwell, as ambition and artistry weave a spell. For it's in the striving where beauty resides, in the dance between longing and what fate decides. His ambition may be vast, but his spirit won't break, for the pursuit of the abstract is a path he'll partake. End poem.
Great read there, Kate. Yeah, I thought this one was wonderful. I gave this one bronze. I thought it had great rhyme and flow, beautiful and brilliant imagery and metaphors. And I like that it's from the perspective of a poet who follows his dream, his ambition to pursue artistic expression, you know, no matter what else anyone else might think. He dares to believe in the magic of words, his dreams he'll achieve. For within this yearning, a paradox lies, his excessive desire that forever defies. Yet he embraces this struggle undeterred, for within this tension, his passion's assured. And I think it's a very relatable piece in that we all, at one point or another, struggle with how to get the right words out, struggle with how to express ourselves. And then, you know, it's such a beautiful moment when it happens. So excellent write and very well done. And Jean, your thoughts?
Well, first off, I got to tell you, Laurent had to drop. His legs are really bad tonight.
Okay.
But I have to say, there is not a part of this poem that I did not like. And that's all capitals, L-I-K-E, like. It would be love, but I'm trying to, like, not be, you know, sappy about it. Yes, I am. I loved it. I really did. Each stanza I felt was just really well done and really well expressed. How it reflects the prompt, I think, it's written so subtly. You know, it's not like, you know, there's a blurb in there that says, you know, oh, ambitions or whatever. It's broken out throughout this poem, and it's so just well done. I don't know how else to express it. I'm sitting here at Katrina, I'm going, yeah, mm-hmm, yeah, uh-huh. And I was, like, all excited because I was like, I really like this poem. How can I put it into words? I do not know. I do write poetry, but I'm only a part-timer. You know, I only have so many words, and I can only use so many at a time. But this poem I really, really love. So excellent job, Jody, and thank you so much for sharing. And I'm going to try and write a better comment than the one I just verbalized. Because I don't know, I found it wonderful. So thank you again.
Well, I think that is an awesome comment. And, yeah, I really like his poetry, and I look forward to reading more of him. So great comment. And, Kate, your thoughts?
I get the feeling that maybe Jean liked this one.
I have that feeling, too.
I could be wrong. I could be wrong. Maybe I'm reading through the lines a bit much, but mind you, I do not blame you. It's absolutely wonderful. That's the only thing you can say about it. I was reading it, and it was so easy. It was as if it was in my head already before I even came to the next line. So beautifully written that it was just seamless, flowed. Oh, wow. And nothing punchy, nothing in your face, nothing to shock or be difficult. Nothing you'd have to run off to the dictionary to find out, oh, that's just me. That's not the rest of you. But yeah, I thought it was just so, so good. I really, yes, lovely. I can have a little bit of a quote because I thought it was that last stanza. For it's in the striving where beauty resides, in the dance between longing and what fate decides. That's just, it's perfect. Absolutely. I wonder. Anyway, very well done. And thank you so much for sharing that with us because it was a pleasant surprise.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Wonderful comments. And up next, we have Fading as the Sunrise by Betty Page. And Jean, will you give that a read for us, please?
I don't know. My computer's giving me a hard time to find all of these poems. It won't refresh.
Oh, geez.
I have to go into the room, literally into the room, in order to find anything, which is very unusual. So I don't know, but it must just be one of them days. Okay. By Betty Page. She's doing mathematical poetry. I just want to let everybody know. I keep seeing her putting up numbers. So I asked her, are you doing mathematical poetry? And she just busted out laughing. She's working on something. It's a secret. Yeah. So if you're listening, Betty, I'm telling them. I'm giving a heads up. You're doing secret poetry. This is called Fading as the Sunrise by Betty Page. Fading colors melt deep past the sea's horizon. Captured light on film, silvers illumine vivid rainbows, brightest hues, a moment in time. Sweet, beautiful love, mesmerized, so enchanting. Two hearts start dancing. Caught up in my fears, I disregard how I feel, became a martyr. Temporary tears, exchange of heartbreaks, glances, love, smoke, and mirrors. Must we play charades? Just toss up all four aces. Can't we roll the dice? Run away in love. Turn around and come back, love. Need not transit. And poem.
Wonderful read there, Jean. And a beautiful write by Betty Page. And Kate.
Oh, that start Fading as the Sunrise is fabulous. A title, Fading as the Sunrise. Yes, this was, as usual, lovely colors captured there. Vivid rainbow, brightest hues, but it's a sad one. It's a sad.
Yeah.
Yeah, love, smoke, and mirrors. We are. You're right there, Betty. But we have to play the charades. We have to play the game, as it were, because people don't like it if you bring a mirror to their life and say, "Look at that. That's what your life is, mate." So you have to. You have to pretend. Play a little, you can be a person that is unflappable to one person and another person sees you as a complete and absolute maniac. So we're all different people to to the people that we're with. And that's what it is about, runaway love. Yeah, I liked it a lot. Thank you so much, Betty.
Absolutely. Wonderful observations there, Kate. And Jean, your thoughts?
You know, I like this piece by Betty. Still working on the same quote, right, Pam?
Yep, same quote.
Okay, thank God. I have a half an idea what it is, so it's just enough for me to kind of go here. The ambition and the excess. Okay, I know. Terrible half-baked attempt to quote the quote. But I thought that this really followed it well, because it's sweet, beautiful love, mesmerized, so enchanting, two hearts start dancing. And then you get caught up in my fears. I disregard how I feel. I became a martyr. Temporary tears, exchange of heartbreaks, glances, love, smoke and mirrors. Must we place your aid? Just toss up all four aces. Can't we roll the dice? It's like, you know, you have all these thoughts of a wonderful love and a wonderful relationship and all this. And, you know, you go all out. And you go all out, like I said, one really kind of all in, you know, and it doesn't work out. It's such a, you put it all out there and you give it your best, and the next thing you know, here you are, disappointment. And I think the excess is just putting it all in there too soon and trying to make something happen before it's time. So I think that it was just nicely done. And Betty, thank you so much for sharing with us. I think I kind of get it. I think I do. I don't know. I've been wrong before, but I like the poem. So, you know, you're not wrong.
Oh, I have to agree. Absolutely. Wonderful take on the prompt. Great comment. You know, it's interesting because with this particular quote that the people have written to for this contest, my ambition is limited to the desire to capture something transient, and yet this ambition is excessive. I really feel like people seem to split between those who focused more on the ambition part of it and the excessive part, and those who focused on the transient part of it. So it was really interesting to see how people took the prompt in different directions. I really liked Betty's 575 lines, her imagery. As Kate pointed out, she has some wonderful use of color. I really like silvers illumine vivid rainbows, brightest hues, a moment in time. To me, this really speaks on the temporary nature of love, temporary nature of emotions. I really like temporary tears, exchange of heartbreaks, glances, love's smoke and mirrors. You know, that questioning of whether or not true love is actually out there. Run away in love, turn around and come back, love, need not transience. I like those end lines because they remind us that, you know, love doesn't have to be a temporary thing, that it can be a fulfilling and lasting thing if we're willing, perhaps, to take a chance on it. So wonderful, right, and very well done. All right, and our last right for this particular contest is Dangerous Ambitions by Jenny the Deep. And it goes like this. One love wasn't enough, for she has an addiction to intimacy. Better love is what she wants, fell for another able to take her to ecstasy, blindly following her heart and not her head. Almost cost her everything she ever had. Her actions almost welcomed death. Used to be good, now is good at being bad. Excessive ambitions can be dangerous. Lust is not love. Love is not guaranteed. Not all dreams are pleasant and glamorous. Sometimes it's best to ignore wild fantasies. End poem. And Jean, your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought this was a nicely penned piece. I'm seeing a theme here with Jenny tonight. It's getting it's just jumping out of me. You know, one love wasn't enough. Of course, she has an addiction to intimacy. Better love is what she wants. Sell for another, able to take her ecstasy. I can't even talk. You know, that's that ambition. You want more. You want more. You want more. And in this, you know, of course, excessive ambition can be dangerous. Lust is not love. Love is not guaranteed. Not all dreams are pleasant and glamorous. Sometimes it's best to ignore wild fantasies. You know, yeah. And I can kind of go along with what you're saying here. You know, I think it was well stated and well done. And again, another great take on that prompt. It's interesting where people have gone with it. It's been a little bit here and a little bit over there, you know, bringing it back. But I think that, you know, the ambition of wanting so much to be satisfied, you know, in your life, to fill in the voids and to make it something wonderful, you know, backfires, because now you have two lovers, because, you know, that's what I get from this. You know, she's blindly following her head, not her head. You know, she's just gone too far, and now it's just all come to an end, or, you know, has I don't know. But anyway, it puts her in a position where it can just backfire on her. I don't see that here in the poem, but it basically is a word of warning in the last stanza, warning against it, because it's not a good idea. So I see that there. Nice job, Jenny, and thanks for sharing.
Absolutely, absolutely. Great comment. Wonderful observations there. And Kate, your thoughts?
Yeah, yes. We're seeing somebody who's not very, I mean, all right, you may be addicted to intimacy, but, you know, there's no need to be intimate with everybody, which is what this person obviously wants, all of that constantly, the buzz and the high and the addicted to intimacy, which I can fully understand. I mean, if you could have a fantastic love life or a fantastic life, you would welcome that, and you wouldn't think it was excessive, because that's what you like. To other people, it might appear to be a completely different thing. But people do tend to, if you've got an obsessive personality, you will always go for the excessive. You will always go for something that's bigger, louder, brighter than that which you already have at the moment. So it's, temptation, you see. Temptation is an absolute swine. It will get you, no matter how much you're trying to do the right thing. There'll be a little voice in the corner going, come on, over here, it's fun. You can't win. And I thought this was very well done, so thank you for sharing, Jenny.
Oh, I have to agree. And yeah, great observation there. And, yep, that little voice that whispers in your ear can be quite loud. I really liked this one. It was, you know, a great emotive write. I like how she tells us writes about a woman who's addicted to dangerous behavior and the high that it creates, you know, constantly putting herself in danger, putting her heart in danger in order to get that temporary fix, that temporary high. Her actions almost welcomed death. It used to be good, now is good at being bad. And, you know, sometimes, you know, it's fun to have those wild fantasies. Sometimes it's best to keep them on the level of being fantasies, you know, rather than reality itself. So great, right, Jenny, and very well done. And our last contest for the night, I decided to try to stick somewhat with the theme, but at the same time, do something a little different, because I didn't want to put up another Bertha Morisot prompt. And so what I did is I went with the painting, A Bar at the Folies Bergère. You can actually that's a painting. You can see it on the topic board if Jean wants to put it in Late Night Poets.
But I do
that,
want
that
to
would be awesome.
Wait, let
sure,
me find
no
it.
Problem.
Okay.
Well,
what am I looking for? I'm looking for...
If you just scroll down a little bit on the topic
barmaid?
Board, there's a painting of a woman standing behind a bar.
A barmaid. That's what I said.
Yeah.
I know a barmaid when I see one. Just saying, everybody. Just saying.
And I chose this painting. I chose Edouard Manet because he was a close friend of Bertha Morisot's. In fact, she was actually married to his brother, and they were close friends. I don't think there was anything else more than friendship, though I don't know for sure. There could have been more. All I know is that from what I've read, they were extremely close, and they especially both had a great appreciation for painting. He was also a impressionist painter, though he also fell into the category of realism painting. Now, a bar at the Folies Bergère, and my apologies for that pronunciation there, but was actually his final painting before he died at like the young age of 54. And it's actually been a discussion of many of art studies because of the use of the mirror and the use of perspective in the painting, and also because if you look at a bigger view of the painting itself and the people who are in the crowd, many of them are said to be some of the famous artists that hung out at the Folies Bergère. It's a wonderful painting to study and to read about. And I just really felt like there was a lot to dig into with this particular one. So we might end up with a couple of carryovers, but that's all right. We will obviously get them somewhere. But in the meantime, these rites will be inspired by a bar at the Folies Bergère by, who did I say? Oh, yeah, Edouard Manet. All right, and up next we have A Gathering of Thought, Deception's Confection Within the Mind's Eye by Liquid Mind Forever. And it goes like this. How am I, your avian Penelope of man's insincere foray, another deviant parlay? What can I say to allay, to be sautéed and filleted? Nuance or nuisance? Another brooch, black jet set, diamante tiara, a cockled broached with different approach, all the same a roach in any other game, shames the lame untamed who disdains but maims, to remain among the well-hung young, discreet, soon to be encroached, proached, scum-bum beat. All the same hot smack and vampire black. Another round of palaver, familiar from one dead cadaver to bed another red's chickscurzo proffering. Can I offer you a drink, ma'am? Just be sure to cover your bets. I still have maybes and debts of advance yet. After, will you still want me? Want you to what? Idle this chatter? What will matter? After. And poem. And I really liked this one. I like that she took it on a metaphorical level. I feel like she saw within the expression of the barmaid a kind of a loneliness, a kind of disenchantment maybe, or just really disconnected with life and bored with life and seeing the same things over and over again. I like the inner and end rhyme and the wordplay, giving layered meaning to the poem was quite well. I thought it was, for me, an excellent write that made me think of the lowly treatment of women in that time period and the loneliness when you're not needed beyond the bar serving, but in this case, but really that loneliness when you're not needed beyond taking care of people's physical needs and find yourself just really no longer having any faith in humanity. So excellent write and very well done. And Jean, your thoughts?
Yeah. There's a lot going on in here, like Deborah always says, you know. I assume this starts out as a dialogue. You know, how am I? Your avian panacea. My man's insincere foray. Another deviant parlay. What can I say to a lay? Being sauteed and filleted. You know, it's like, here we go again. You know, someone else comes up, how are you? An insincere foray. You know, it's just one of those encounters that doesn't really mean much, is what I get from that. And, you know, nuance or nuisance. I thought that was an intriguing second vignette. The whole thing is just that, nuance or nuisance. And, yeah, I guess that sums it all up right there. And I like that. You know, another brooch, black jet set, diamante tiara, a cockled brooch with different, of course, all the same, a roach in any other game. Same as a lame, untamed, but he disdains and maims. There's wonderful use of rhyme in there. And wordplay, as always. You know, Deb's really good at wordplay. And getting her point across, you know, and it's always unique in her writing because she just doesn't come out and say it, and it is, you know, metaphorical, but it's just a different, the way she words it is very different. It's not just simple, or I shouldn't say simple, that's not the word I want. I don't know what word I want, but I think that she really does a fine job. Because she keeps us on her toes, she keeps us thinking as you're reading through this. And I like that about the wordplay. But I think this did a great job, and I think it was a good reflection on that prompt, because, you know, anybody who's ever been a barmaid or a bartender, you know, I can kind of get this. It do have these encounters with people in that position. And whether it's way back when or current, you know, you still have people who come in and want to talk your ear off or tell you about their life. And, you know, some people are just tough cookies. So, I mean, I don't know. But I think that she captures something here that may otherwise have been lost because of the way she did it. So I think that was great. So wonderful job, Deb, and thanks for sharing. Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. Great comment. And yeah, you're right. I think it is very much supposed to be written in the idea of the conversation between the barmaid and the man that she's talking to. So very cool. Mm-hmm. And Kate, your thoughts?
Yes, this is very interesting, actually. Yeah, that expression, that is somebody who is not only totally fed up, has got to the point where they're beginning to become numb. And they, you know, really, you can only take so much of a high emotion, and then you either go with the high emotion and get worse, or you switch off. And it looks very like this little girl has switched off. Now, I'm trying to figure out if this is, somebody mentioned a mirror. Was it you, Pam? Is that a mirror is that her back that we see in?
Yes, yes. It, in the artwork, yep,
yeah.
That's her back.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Because I'm thinking, he must be talking to her, because her expression looks like, you know, for goodness sake, leave me alone.
yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, for goodness sake, it's him again. Oh, no, it's him again. Yeah, so that is what made me think. And I actually visited the Folies Bergère when I was in Paris. And I was like, oh, lovely. So, yes, great experience. And beautifully written. I really enjoyed it. And I love the play on words. Very clever. Very clever. All the same hot smack and vampire black is a wonderful line, but I'm just not very sure where it fits in. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much for sharing.
Yeah, that is a wonderful line. I think it speaks on the idea of those people who, you know, like that come out at night to attend the bars and the, you know, nightclubs or whatever you call them, and really don't see the light of day. Not that they're literally vampires, but they much prefer the going ons of the nighttime.
Yeah.
I think that's so cool that you actually got to go to the Folies Bergère. That is awesome. Very cool.
Yeah.
And
brilliant.
Oh, awesome. And speaking of which, up next we have Folies Bergère by Silent Tree. And I'm so glad you said that, because honestly, I was stumbling over how exactly to say it. So thank you for that, Kate. And would you give this poem a read for us, please, Kate?
I would be happy to. I just have to find it, so bear with me. Refresh, 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 refresh. Oh, yeah, Folies Bergère. Ha, ha, ha. It is wonderful. I love it. Okay, sorry. Silent Trees, Folies Bergère. Satin rifle petticoats kiss the thresholds of opal-veined marble stairways. Polished banisters of scented rosewood and floors waxed walnut herringbone glaze. Pale perfume powdered wigs and golden pheasant feather quill fascinators. Flush whiskered faces, swilled cognac brandy in top hats with honey-dewed tipped cigars. Silk eyelets, lace corset, navels neath, pearl button, sable fleece waistcoats. Silver bauble locket ribboned crest on her naked, ivory-hued breastbone. As white prism halos pirouette from carousels of teardrop champagne chandeliers. The crystal bowl of clementine shades a goblet of soft rose petals blossoms. Hourglass bottle columns from chine, hooped oak barrels, vineyards of Chardonnay, hand-pressed granite bench tops beneath crystal-fluted wine glasses, deftly laid. Rouge-blushed cheeks with eyes of stained glass, frescoes gaze, a candelabra masquerade. Applause echoes arch rafters as vaudeville performers and burlesque portrayed. A ballroom bathed in aniseed whispers from liquid lacquered licorice tongues. Backdrops of gown gossamer drapes a velvet crescent promenade stage. Lavender lapels of rhododendrons lay abreast the frogbow pinstriped soprano. A string quartet glissades through amphitheatres ends at Folies Bergère. End poem.
Thank you.
Great read there, Kate. And what a wonderful write by Silent Tree. And Jean, your thoughts?
You know, I like this piece. I thought it was full of imagery and great descriptions from the image itself. But in the same respect, it added to it, which was nice. You don't really need the image because, you know, she's painted this picture throughout. For your mind, I mean, when you read it, you can just visualize all this that's going on. I have to say, you know, a ballroom bathed in aniseed whispers from liquor lacquered licorice tongue, backdrops of gowned gossamer, drapes of velvet crescent promenade stage, lavender lapels on a rhododendron lay abreast of frog, bow, pinstripe soprano, a string quartet glissades through amphitheaters of silence at Folies Bergère. I like the way she tied it up with that. And I like the use of alliteration. I think it was very was lovely in the writing and the descriptions I thought. So very well done, and thank you so much, Silent Tree. I really like this piece very much. Absolutely.
Absolutely, yeah, I have to agree. And I felt like the same thing, that she really painted a picture with her words. And Kate, you did a beautiful read of that. Your thoughts?
Thank you. You've heard of jump shots in films where something comes out of the corner of your eye and everybody jumps because they get afraid. It's called a jump shot. Well, this is a trip shot. Yes, I was convinced I was going to make a mistake. Oh no, I can't keep going with this. Something's going to happen. But no, it was okay. I did it. I was quite pleased.
You did it.
I didn't want to ruin it because it's got such a lovely flow. I know I made one little mistake, but other than that, it was just, the alliteration, oh my goodness me, that is par excellent. Oh, I've gone into the French. so cool. But yes, it was very clever, very well done. I enjoyed reading it, and all of it was just, it takes you back to that time when they had the pale perfume powdered wigs and golden pheasants, feather curl fascinators. Oh, so cool, so cool. Yes, I really enjoyed it. So thank you for sharing, Silent Tree.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, absolutely wonderful comment. Yeah, I really enjoyed this one. A great use of imagery and alliteration. Like was mentioned, she really painted a scene with her words. I like how captivating this was and how she brings us back in time and captures the essence of that time period. All the way through, she really brings us into the Folies Bergère and the atmosphere of it, the entertainment of it. I really like A Ballroom Bathed in Aniseed Whispers from Liqueur Lacquered Licorice Tongues. I like that she brings in the drinking of, what is that the Green Fairy is, that drink? Absinthe. Yeah, I like that she brings in the drinking of absinthe. I thought that was a nice touch. And then, wonderful imagery in silk eyelets, lace corsets, navels, neath pearl button, sable fleece, waistcoat, silver bauble, locket, ribbons, crest on her naked ivory-hued breastbone. There's almost a sensuality in that description and a softness throughout the lines that goes all the way through. And, you're really just brought into the moment. So wonderful write and very well done. And we'll have two carryovers, which I will put on Friday's After Midnight show, which is Break On Through. And those will be by Big E2 and The Warrior Poet. Great show tonight. Thank you, Jean and Kate, as always, for being my Twisted Sisters. Thank you to everyone who is listening now or will be listening later. We appreciate you all. Thank you to everyone who wrote for this show. You are all just, just so appreciated. This has just been a wonderful, wonderful night of poetry. And thank you so much, everyone. And Jean, anything you'd like to say in closing?
No, just tomorrow night, everybody, if you get time or you have a chance, we have The Art of Seduction with Gray Eye Smith and Kate, Weaver of Dreams. So pick up the phone, give them a call. I'm sure they'd be delighted to hear from you. Always looking for readers and commenters. So, other than that, I don't think there's anything else on the docket until Thursday. Is Richard Weissman and in our Craft and Sell and Art. There we go. And I'm sure he'd appreciate a call too. Other than that, not a thing. Great show tonight, Pam. Wonderful prompts. And it was a lot of fun. And thanks, Lauren, for giving it a try and calling in. Appreciate it.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. And thank you, everyone.
Okay.
Have a good
Thanks,
night.
Thanks, everybody. You
good.
Take care. Good night.
Good night.
Good night, Kate.
Good night, my dear. Good night, Pam. Lovely, lovely, lovely show. Bye.